So, well, thank you very much to all the colleagues for this last session, which I enjoyed listening to very, very much. My task today really is to provide the listeners with an overview of the sessions we had this week. We're on Africa Virtual, Africa Month Virtual Symposium. And colleagues, you may all recall that last year was the first time we hosted the Africa Month event. And it was been hosted by the University of Cape Town, the APRM, that's Eddie Moloka, who we're waiting for, and the Nelson Mandela School of Public Governance. This has been an opportunity to create a platform, a multi-sectoral platform with students, policymakers, civil society activists, especially youth and women, business leaders, trade unions, and on the platform just now, people from philanthropy. Last year, we celebrated Africa Month at the Baxter Theatre. Africa and the world as a whole was looking very different. What happened? An invisible object, COVID-19, has exposed the underlying weaknesses, asymmetries, inequalities, and contradictions of our world and our societies. This health pandemic has turned into an economic and social crisis that shaped the main theme of this Africa Month sessions we had this week. So the theme of our session, you'll recall, is Africa's innovations in the global fight against COVID-19 pandemic. The speakers discuss some of the weaknesses, but also the great strengths and opportunities for Africa ushered in by this crisis. Most of the speakers in the week argued that the crisis is a great opportunity to reflect and strategize on how to rebuild our world, our societies, and our economies, based on the principles of Ubuntu, inclusiveness, fairness, equity, and social justice. Some of you may have also joined the first event we had on Monday. The new Secretary General, Wamkele Mene, was part of an excellent panel of African intellectuals, experts on regional trade and production, and policymakers. There are at least three lessons that we could learn from the discussion about the impact of COVID-19 on trade in Africa. The first lesson is we can't rely on global markets for our exports as they have been disrupted by lockdowns. The second is we cannot anymore rely on northern markets for essential supplies of pharmaceutical products, as most of these countries have restricted the exports of these vital essential products. And thirdly, African countries need to learn to look to themselves and increase our own industrialization and regional cooperation based on the values of Ubuntu and solidarity. That was the first event. And then during the rest of the week, the program on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday had several sessions. On Wednesday, we had two excellent panels of experts who discussed how to strengthen knowledge networks and try to explain the reasons for Africa's relative success in managing the COVID-19 pandemic. And on Thursday, we hosted another panel with the African Climate Foundation to discuss the linkages between climate change and development in Africa. And then on Friday, that's today, we started a discussion this morning on the critical importance of ethical leadership and democratic governance. We were led in the very first session in the morning by the Vice Chancellor, Mamokgethi Bagai, who gave us an excellent overview of the impact of COVID-19 on our world and on the continent. And of course, we just finished a session now on philanthropy on the continent. So just to recap some of the insights that we gained from several of the sessions we had during the last few days. On Wednesday, the two sessions that we had on knowledge systems and knowledge production reflected also on why the pandemic has been less virulent on the continent. And there were several explanations that were offered from some of the key speakers to this question. Dr. Ahmed Omar, who is the Deputy Director of the African Centers of Disease Control, pointed to one of the key puzzles that are confounding observers and analysts. Why does Africa have a mere 1% of the total COVID-19 deaths? He pointed out that the African Centers of Disease Control had been involved in training about 52 of the 55 countries in WHO protocols during the last 3 months. They established about 100 laboratories and have a program to train about 10 million community workers to do testing and tracing over the next few months. The key lesson, he argued, is that health should be seen as an investment, and countries should increase their budgetary expenditure and health infrastructure if we are to successfully withstand the challenges posed by the virus and similar viruses in the future. We had some excellent case studies presented by key people from these countries, and I'll mention just two. Uganda, Dr. Diane Atwine, the permanent secretary of the Health Department of Uganda, explained the puzzle for Uganda's relative success. She called for early and decisive action already on the 15th of January, resulting in a national response plan that gained approval of government by the 30th of January this year. She explained that the leadership of the president and the multi-sectorial command council and its scientific advisory committee were key factors for Uganda's relative success. And then we heard from Dr. Moussaka Fallah, the Deputy Director General of the Liberian National Public Health Institute, who explained that the key factors behind Liberia's relative success in managing the health pandemic was the lessons that they had learned from the previous pandemic, the Ebola pandemic in West Africa. This is in the years 2014 to 2016, and later in the DRC, 2018 and 2019. He told us that on this 22nd of January already, Liberia was the first country to apply screening at airports and quarantining. These two cases indicate increased community cohesion and a renewed trust in leadership and the state in some countries in Africa. Later, we heard that Africa's experience thus far in many countries is mixed, with some showing stronger judicious leadership and some not. On Thursday, we had an excellent session on the relationship between climate change and development in Africa. It was co-hosted by the African Climate Foundation and the Nelson Mandela School, and it achieved more than what it set out to do. I took about 7 takeaways from this session. First, both COVID-19 and climate change show the interrelatedness of health, climate, and development, and that an integrated response is required, focusing on key underlying weaknesses, poverty, and inequality. Africa is well endowed with wind, solar, and hydro energy resources. The prices of renewables today, globally, are lower than fossil fuels, facilitating Africa's adoption of green industrialization and elimination of costly fuel subsidies and taxes. Third, both major structural changes and in regional infrastructure build and community-based approaches are required for a just transition to a low carbon economy. And fourth, climate finance that is available to support climate change can help to reduce Africa's debt burden. The fifth takeaway was that investment in climate infrastructure, together with health infrastructure, can become key levers to stimulate economic revival in Africa. Sixth, Africa needs to be actively engaged in negotiations with bilateral donors like the EU and China, and multilateral partners like the United Nations, FCC, the WTO, and other UN bodies to ensure that it is able to shape the future architecture of a Green New Deal. And seventh, Africa's youthful and more socially aware population can advance this transition to a new green economy. So that was the session on Wednesday, on Thursday, and this morning we had in the first session an overview of the impact of COVID-19 by Professor Mamokgethi Phageng, the Vice Chancellor of the University. She made a powerful statement on the critical role of education in nurturing democratic governance. She urged that the current crisis should not go to waste, but be seized as an opportunity for Africa to participate actively in finding solutions to the crisis. She pointed out that UCT staff and students are making some significant contributions to the solutions to the COVID-19 crisis. I urge you all to read her very rich statement. We heard from the other speakers that although the president and the government of South Africa have been applauded for their judicious management of the pandemic, more has to be done to include civil society voices in decision-making and accountability, and the police and army need to be more accountable. More trust needs to be built between leaders and people in South Africa. The pandemic has exposed the significant weaknesses of health systems in Africa. COVID-19 is being abused by officials of government to continue with corruption. In others, there is a lack of legitimacy due to poor leadership, and this has resulted in communities disobeying health regulations. We heard about the case of Tanzania, which reflects some of the complexities of the African context, which militate against, in that case, even implementing a successful lockdown to save lives. One of the most interesting speakers we had today was a key activist in South Africa, Kobisi Jonas, who argued that COVID-19 is a once-in-a-century pandemic that will reshape our world in at least five significant ways. First, the relationship between the state and market, he argued, is being reshaped with an imperative to focus on the poorest and for the state to guide the market to deliver on economic growth and development. Second, he argued that democratic and ethical leadership can save lives, whilst poor leadership can cost lives, as we have observed in other countries in the world and in Africa. Thirdly, he argued that COVID-19 will hit Africa the hardest due to Africa's underlying weaknesses. However, he stated that Africa can seize this opportunity to transition to a green new economy, a green new world. Africa cannot afford big stimulus packages, he stated, like the OECD countries. And thus, at the end of this pandemic, we are likely to see increasing inequality between nations in the world. And finally, he called for a Marshall Plan and for multilateral governance to be reshaped in a manner that is more fair, balanced, and inclusive. We just had an exciting and robust discussion amongst those involved in the philanthropy area on the continent. And one of the speakers stated that before the crisis, social unrest was prevalent in at least 70 countries around the world, and these the causes of this unrest related to the inequality of resources and rights. COVID-19, the speakers argued, has exposed these inequalities and systemic weaknesses in our societies. And in general, the speakers call for a move away from reinforcing the status quo and for philanthropy to support those organizations that are focusing on the root causes of inequality and working to bring about real change in the world. So finally, I come to the last part of my summary and conclusions to the sessions over the last few weeks. I want to thank all those who have contributed to making this week a success. I want to thank the main sponsors, the University of Cape Town, the APRM, and I hope Eddie Moloka will come on after me to make his comments, and of course the Nelson Mandela School for arranging this series. Although we could not use the Baxter Theatre as we did last year, we still had a very significant discussion, and all the speakers and the participants engaged in a robust discussion. I want to thank all those who have been involved in putting this webinar series together. I must mention the chair of the organizing committee, Libo, and her team for their steadfast and resilient efforts throughout, to Dad, the CMD, particularly Nico Badenhausen and Nina Taibosch for their technical support throughout the last few days. And I should not forget the Nelson Mandela School, Shanil Haricharan, a big technical team that we had behind us, Penny, Velasca, Petunia, Andile, and others. I want to thank all the speakers for their innovation and resilience in using this new technology. There have been some moments, difficult moments, over the last few days, but everyone has been very patient. I want to thank all the participants for joining and for your active engagements in the chats, the comments, the questions. And finally, I want to say Happy Africa Month. We still have a few days. Viva Africa and God bless Africa.